When you need to work quickly and confidently across different apps and platforms, consistent quality communication is key. Whether you're writing documents, emails, or presentations, you need Grammarly. It's an AI writing partner that helps you get your work done faster with better writing. It's always there to help because it works where you work, across 500,000 apps and websites, so you can get more done no matter where you're writing. Grammarly is the gold standard of responsible AI, trusted by millions of professionals for 15 years. It gives you personalized writing suggestions based on your audience, goals, and context, plus tone suggestions to help you navigate even the most difficult work conversations. 96% of users agree Grammarly helps them craft more impactful writing. Sign up and download Grammarly for free at grammarly.com/podcast. That's grammarly.com/podcast. Grammarly. Easier said, done.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Well, another week, another matchup of Caitlin Clark and Angel Reese that drew a record audience for the WNBA, the largest WNBA audience in 23 years for the second straight week, as the Fever and Sky played to 2.3 million viewers on ESPN Sunday afternoon, and that surpassed the previous 23-year high of 2.25 million for Fever Sky on CBS the prior Sunday. So, obviously, Caitlin Clark's a big draw. Caitlin Clark plus Angel Reese is an even bigger draw. Welcome to the Sports Media Watch podcast. I'm John Lewis, joined as always by Drew Lerner. Please subscribe to the SMW podcast feed on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and more. So let's talk just briefly. You know, obviously, what more is there to say about the WNBA and the ratings? And it's becoming increasingly obvious that Caitlin is a draw in and of herself. Just set another record on ION Friday night against Atlanta, 1.2 million for that game. But the combination of Caitlin and Angel Reese, as we did see in college, is something that is, the best bet right now for the WNBA. Those are the two most watched games now since 2001. The third most watched was Caitlin's debut in May. So there is something about this matchup that people like. They like the bad blood. They like the, you know, the quality of play. I mean, all the games have been close and tightly contested down the stretch. A lot of young talent on these teams, not just Clark and Reese, but also Aaliyah Boston. Not Alyssa Boston, Aaliyah Boston. It's a great matchup for the league. I know that Andrea Carter kind of tapped into her inner ESPN the other day and called it a mid-off. That's what happens when you have people go on these morning shows and they feel like they need to say something colorful. And oftentimes, probably better off not being so colorful. Leave that stuff for Stephen A. Smith. Obviously, these are not the elite teams in the WNBA, but eight teams in the WNBA in a 12-team league make the playoffs. And I think it's very likely that at least one of these two will be in the playoffs. And remember, the WNBA postseason, best of three in that first round. The high seed gets the first two games at home. The low seed gets game three on their home gym. So, it's entirely possible we get to September and Indiana or Chicago is hosting a game three to decide who advances on their home floor. Don't get me wrong. I'm not going to gaslight here. Indiana and Caitlin are by far a bigger draw than Chicago and Angel Reese. But Chicago and Angel Reese clearly have a following. Ideally you'll get them both. If you had to choose, you'd want Indiana, but ideally you'll get them both. And who knows, maybe you get a playoff series between them, probably not this year, but in a couple of years. And for the WNBA at that point, even the NFL competition isn't going to slow that roll. All right, Drew, I'll bring you in.
Yeah. Well, what more is there to say? This is the Caitlin Clark effect, and now, you bring up some interesting points about the playoff format. Should the Fever or the Sky get in, It is just a best of three, so there could be a lot of parity there. It's possible that the league could luck out and have one or even both teams make the playoffs and perhaps even advance in the playoffs. That might be a pipe dream for the league and their partners right now, but it's fair to say that if that were to happen, I think we could see numbers approaching what we saw in the early rounds of the women's tournament earlier this year. Caitlin Clark in the postseason is a proven draw. So if the WNBA can get that in her rookie year, that would go a long way, I think, towards continuing to build and grow on the success they've had this year.
Yeah, I mean, obviously that would be tremendous. I don't know if it'll get to tournament levels. Remember, this is all during the NFL season, right? All during football season, September, October, during the baseball playoffs. But, you know, certainly you'll get much better. I mean, the WNBA regular season is a better draw than its playoffs generally because of that football factor. So we'll see. You know, I think if you can get, you know, it's kind of like 1986, you know, the Bulls with Michael, they were 32-50. Michael missed nearly all the season with a foot injury, but came back for the playoffs and scored 63 against Boston in game two, right? I mean, like, it doesn't matter what the record is. No one says, well, Michael scored 63, but they were a 32-win team that got swept in the first round. They might say that if it was LeBron, but they don't say that about what Michael did back in 86. I mean, you know, to me, you got 8 teams out of 12 that make it. I'm not really quite sure why Dallas is so bad this year, but they're way down there. But really, the teams that don't make the WNBA playoffs are dreadful. If you're mediocre, you'll get in. So as long as you're not dreadful, you're fine. Let's take a quick look at the standings here as of Tuesday when we're taping. Indiana would not be in the playoffs right now. They're 7-11. They're a half game back of the Sky. But the Sparks, obviously, they're done for with the ACL tear by Cameron Brink. The Mystics are, well, they're much better since their terrible start, but they're still 4-13. And then Dallas, again, I mean, you know, I don't know what's going on there. The Wings are, you know, they're playing like Wings Hauser out there rather than the Dallas Wings. You know who Wings Hauser is?
No.
I know you don't. I know you don't, of course. You wouldn't know who Wings Hauser is or Bo Hopkins, two great actors who work great together. Yeah, look, I mean, Dallas, I think, probably at some point will have to turn it around unless they suffered some kind of injury that I don't know about. I'm pretty sure Okumbawale is healthy. I don't know why they're 3-13. But I would imagine they would get back into the playoff race at some point. So that's the only team that I think could surpass Indiana and Chicago. And, you know, as long as that doesn't happen, one of them will get in. That's the latest on the WNBA front. Tremendous numbers. And that has just been almost a non-story at this point. It's kind of amazing how often the WNBA now has been on the rise this season. Let's talk a little bit now about another story that you might be thinking is a little played out, the NBA media rights discussion. So we are still, you know, we don't know when that's going to happen. John Arand in his newsletter on Monday reported, well, July. Well, it is June 25th when we're taping. Next week at the 4th of July, I would expect maybe by All-Star Week of MLB, ahead of Summer League, that might be when you start to hear something more official. But while we're waiting on the, and we won't be doing a podcast next week unless something really weird happens. I mean, Tuesday of July 4th week, why would we do that, right? So this is, so we, maybe by the time we come back, we'll be talking NBA media rights. But in the meantime, you know, obviously, I think a lot of people are trying to figure out, well, what in the world is going on here? 76 billion? Did you see the ratings of the finals? I think it's important to really break down a few realities about why the NBA is getting all this money. To begin with, the NBA Finals is 4 to 7 games every year. The NBA media rights deal is for the finals, playoffs, the regular season, the All-Star weekend, for the Summer League and the draft and the WNBA. I mean, everything the NBA has to offer is part of this $76 billion. You look at the finals ratings and you say, well, NBA Finals, it's no different than the World Series. Well, it is. It did do better than the World Series comfortably. But it's also way behind. Men's college hoops, women's. The only sport that comes close to that, and I'm trying to figure out exactly what that number is college football. College football is either slightly ahead of the NBA or a little bit behind. I haven't resolved yet exactly, but it's in the same range. It's the only other sport that compares to the NBA in terms of that volume. Obviously, you know, college football is a bigger draw than the NBA. But again, you're not getting another property that offers 239 million viewer audiences. There you go, right? I mean, that's not the only thing, but that is a significant factor. You can pretty well surmise. I don't think it would be, crazy to think that the NBA brought that up in negotiations, right? I would expect that was a significant point of emphasis. So to me, the volume, yeah, you get to the finals and the finals isn't great. But even the finals has volume, 4 to 7 games. You know what the Final Four national championship is every year in college hoops? It's 3 games. So even an NBA Finals sweep gives you more, an extra night and more advertising inventory. And of course, the NBA is literally longer at 2.5 hours to two hours. You got to remember, this is all to sell advertising here. So the more games, the longer the games, these are things that contribute. So again, if you're looking, you're saying, well, I don't think the NBA is so much more popular than all these other sports to be making $7 billion a year while nothing else is getting past $2 billion. That's a fair point, but that's not really what this is about. It's not about, wow, the NBA is so popular, we got to get these rights. It's, we can get how many nights of programming for Peacock? How many nights of programming for ESPN? And of course, the NBA also came to market at a very opportune time. The intersection of the decline of cable and the rise of streaming, where both are still in the game. Eventually, it'll just be streaming, right? But for now, both cable and streaming are in the game. And that musical chairs that the NBA has been able to achieve, where you got 4 parties and 3 packages, has worked out tremendously for them as well. Just a little explainer, if you're listening to the podcast on Wednesday, just explaining why the NBA is making all of this money, despite ratings that probably do not look very impressive to a lot of folks, at least during the finals.
Yeah, really well said, John. You really get at the crux of the point here on both fronts, John. And that crux is scarcity, right? Be it the scarcity of good programming to advertise on for brands that are looking to market with the NBA, or scarcity when it comes to inventory that these cable channels can go to the distributor and say, hey, the cable operators, I should say, and say, hey, you know, look at this valuable programming, this popular programming we have. At the end of the day, it comes down to whether it's just 3 packages and 4 suitors for those packages, or it's a limited number of ad inventory. It comes down to the fact that there's really not much else out there that can offer what the NBA is offering. That used to not be the case. Of course, there was, you know, fewer options when it came to entertainment 10, 20, 30 years ago. So this is just how it was, right? You got more viewers, and this was the only option there anyway. But now, in a world where advertisers can go and, you know, do brand deals with influencers on YouTube, or, you know, sign with a TikToker, there's really not too many options when it comes to mass appeal advertising. And that's what the NBA is offering. How'd you phrase this? 239 million fewer games.
Yeah.
I mean, that is, you know, way more than I would have ever expected. I didn't even know there was 239 national window NBA games in any given year. So that is a huge selling point for the NBA.
Well, yeah, I mean, there's 141 NFL windows total in a given, you know, last year. And I think I included the Pro Bowl with that. You know, so, I mean, it's the volume. It's the amount of inventory. That's inventory is the most important thing in sports TV. That's why everyone's adding all this extra stuff. You know, you're adding an 18th week of the NFL. You're adding an in-season tournament. You're adding, in terms of the NCAA, you're trying to add more teams to the tournament, you know, and all the complaints about, well, we don't have, you know, we have too many games. You're not going to see any games reduced, because it is so important now to have the tonnage that a lot of these leagues have. It's just really, really important. So to me, I think if you're the NBA, what you have to offer goes so far beyond how the finals does. It just goes so far beyond, oh, well, you know, hey, the NBA finals got 11 million viewers. First of all, that's still pretty decent. It's not great, right? But it's not 9.1 million like MLB with the World Series. And frankly, 9.1 million is also pretty decent. You know, we live in an era now where it's Tuesday. We're going to see the Stanley Cup final numbers coming out. We'll talk about that briefly coming up. You know, people are going to be doing backflips over 7 million viewers on ABC. And that's not a bad audience. 7 million viewers on Monday night in June on ABC, where it's not the NBA. ABC's not getting that anywhere else. So these numbers are still pretty good. Media Post reported during the NBA finals that ad rates to the finals were up 40%. And that was coming off of Heat Nuggets last year. Not a great series from a ratings perspective. Maybe advertisers were as bullish as I was. I thought it would be easily the most watched finals in 5 years because, you know, how could it do worse than Heat Nuggets? But, you know, to me, I look at that and I say, it used to be if your ratings were low for the finals, that would affect your ad rates the next year. Well, that's not the case anymore. Maybe it wasn't even the case back then, right? But I mean, it's not the case anymore. That's for certain. The ad revenue that you're getting as ABC is more than justifying the price tag to keep the finals exclusively. Remember, ESPN wanted to keep exclusive rights to the finals and overpaid, or well, paid a little bit more, I should say, because they were going to overpay anyway, right? And they paid, well, I shouldn't call it an overpay, because that kind of undermines the argument. So ESPN and ABC wanted to keep exclusive rights to the finals, and to me, the amount they paid to keep it is justified by the ad revenue that they're pulling in. Yeah.
Is it fair to say, though, John, because I think a lot of people out there, when they're doing, you know, back the napkin math on this, that what ESPN is paying or will be paying for this new package of NBA games in the new set of deals, you know, $2.6, $2.7, maybe even $2.8 billion for their new package. It's fair to say that they're not making up that much money dressed off of the advertising revenue, correct? A lot of the value in paying that much money is the value that they're, you know, extracting from the cable operators because of that they have this inventory. So I think it's you know, important to clear that up, that it's not like they're directly making that $2.6 billion back just off the back of advertisers. I think the majority of this revenue is still coming from the cable operators.
Of course, really all I was trying to say is that, you know, obviously we look at the finals ratings as being quite low, but you're still making tremendous amounts of advertising revenue off of the finals. So even though, okay, yeah, it didn't do that well this year, advertisers are still paying a premium for that content and figure to continue to do so unless the ratings really fall off. Because again, you know, I mean, there is a difference between the ad revenue for an NBA finals and the ad revenue for a Stanley Cup final. So you don't want to ever get down to that level. But, you know, where the NBA is right now, you're still going to make good money just off the advertising. Now, obviously, as you said, ESPN needs the NBA, needs to keep everything that it has in order to maintain the prices that it's getting in terms of, you know, we talk about the decline of cable, subscriber fees still matter. You know, all of these things are still significant drivers of revenue. And ESPN, because they have the NFL, I'm sure wouldn't take, you know, a massive hit. But certainly you don't want to take any hit. You need to keep as much money as you can possibly make. So to me, it comes down to the financial argument for keeping the NBA justifies the high price tag, because you don't want to mess around with losing rights. One, it always ends up being the case that the money you're spending in rights looks like a bargain in a few years, always. And two, you know, the money that you are losing out on, if you're not going to get another opportunity very soon because a lot of these rights are locked up.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
I think you hit the nail on the head when you say that these deals always look better several years into the future. I mean, let's just look at what the NFL deal looks like now. Obviously, that's the granddaddy of media rights deals. Disney's paying $2.7 billion annually for the NFL. That's about what they'll be paying for the NBA. Yep. And that includes, you know, highlight rights and stuff for the NFL. That's why Disney is paying more than the other networks, which are all paying, you know, CBS $2.1 billion, Fox $2.2 billion. Amazon Prime is only paying $1 billion for Thursday Night Football. I mean, these are all looking really good in comparison to the NBA deals now. And of course, like you said, the tonnage of the NBA is really a lot of that value. That's tonnage that the NFL cannot offer. It seems like you've done some research on this, John, the past few days, and maybe the NFL has about half of the, you know, national TV windows that the NBA can offer over a given year. Is that, you know, about correct?
Oh yeah, I mean, I tallied it up from last year and I got 141 windows from the regular season through the Super Bowl, including the Pro Bowl. So really 140. Now remember the 239 for the NBA, that's not all the windows. There's always a handful of NBA games every year that get, you know, under a million. And if you include NBA TV is kind of, well, is it national TV or not? You know, it is national TV. Every game is blacked out and it's, you know, they don't send crews to every game. It's a little bit, it's like MLB Network or NHL Network. If you include NBA TV, then it's even more games total. Now, none of those NBA TV games are getting to a million. So, but there's just way more inventory. There's just much more to spread around with the NBA.
It's just interesting to think about, like, what these networks are paying on, like, a per game or per television window basis, with networks paying around the same for the NFL that they will be the NBA in their upcoming set of deals. I mean, that deal just looks like such a bargain at this point, despite the fact that, you know, a few years ago when those deals were signed, you know, the headline $100 billion deal, you know, it seemed outrageous at the time. But of course, we know this is where the sports right market is at. If you can move the needle at least somewhat, which the NBA can, you can get a massive deal. And if you're the NFL, you can get essentially whatever you want, which I'm sure is why everyone is anticipating that they will be opting out 5 years from now.
Yeah, well, they feed each other. You know, the NFL gets to these incredibly high points, and then you normalize paying well over $2 billion a year for sports rights, which allows you to do that for the NBA, even though the NBA isn't as popular, because you've already set that precedent. And that allows you to then pay $3 billion and $4 billion a year for the NFL in the next set of negotiations. They feed each other, you know, and ultimately, I don't know when the fun times will stop and who will get left holding the bag, probably the NBA and not the NFL. But we are at least 11 years from that happening.
Well, it sounds like this is going to be a must-read article, John. I can't wait for it to be published tomorrow. I can't think of any league outside the NBA that could do this. And I also think it's a good point that it is fortunate timing for the league. Like you said, the intersection of streaming and cable, there's a lot of mouths to feed and not a lot of inventory to feed them with. So this is really kind of the perfect storm if you're the NBA, and they made out quite well.
Yeah, so that's something to read if you have not already. It's up on the site this morning, I'm sure. But before we go, let's talk about the Stanley Cup Final. So this was a series that really was basically just like the NBA through four games. One team wins the first three and then gets blown out in game four. Well, the Celtics on a Monday night went out and, you know, beat the Mavericks easily to clinch a title in five games. It took the Panthers until the following Monday night to finally finish off the Edmonton Oilers last night in Game 7. So we don't have the ratings, obviously, for Game 7 yet, but those will be coming out Tuesday afternoon, and you can read about them on SMW. But let's talk about the coverage. So this was another year where ESPN and ABC provided significant post-game coverage of the Cup Final. Did I say second straight? Because obviously, second time in 3 years. When they had the Cup Final in 22, they did a lot of post-game coverage, and it was pretty shocking because a lot of people were used to NBC kicking it down to cable after about 10 minutes. You'd get maybe a couple of people holding the cup, and then NBC would sign off and send you to NBCSN. ESPN and ABC have not done that. In 22, I think the thought was that, oh, well, because it was a Sunday night, ESPN has Sunday night baseball, so they can't put the post-game on ESPN. But this time around, I think it's just basically that this is the policy. What I'm curious about is whether or not this is ESPN being a good partner or the NHL having dealt with NBC cutting them off mid-celebration, putting this in the contract. Because it wouldn't be shocking to me if the NHL said, contractually, you have to carry the entire post-game for the Stanley Cup Final until the end or for 50 minutes or whatever. It wouldn't surprise me, because when NBC would do that, when they would, you know, you're looking at maybe the third person, you know, skating with the cup, and they're like, well, time for your local news and Jimmy Fallon, go switch to NBCSN. It made the NHL look like a really small time league. And NBC did a good job with hockey, but that always made the NHL look like a small time league. The extensive post game coverage, I think, certainly does the opposite.
Yeah, that's a good point. And I have to admit, John, I only watched the first period of Game 7, so I did not see the post game. I switched over to Copa America after that. And that just shows my sporting preferences, I suppose. But in any case, you're right. The fact that ABC, who we've discussed extensively on this podcast, is not the friendliest when it comes to preempting their other programming for live sports, carried the post game all the way through all the celebration, the trophy ceremony, etc. That is a great look for the NHL. I mean, I was not familiar that NBC would cut off the post game, you know, 10 minutes after the game ended. And you're completely right. Like, that does make you look small time. That's something I'd expect with like a college baseball or a college softball, you know, post game show, right? Not one of the big four North American sports. So I wouldn't be surprised if that's something that the NHL did in fact negotiate and write into the contract, but I'd be interested to see if maybe this is a slight shift in the way that Disney, ESPN, and ABC are handling things in a new era of, you know, live sports and the importance of live sports programming to the broadcast channels.
Yeah, I mean, probably not. I mean, I think maybe it's, look, I will say there is an aspect to the hockey coverage that is not replicated in the NBA. And you get the sense that the hockey is a labor of love. There's a lot of hockey fans who do not like ESPN's broadcast. They are not fans of Sean McDonough. I will say Sean McDonough, by the way, who, you know, when Sean McDonough first called a major North American title series, they were still making new episodes of Cheers. It was 1992 when he did the World Series for CBS. And, you know, he has his own style. He sounds almost exactly like Mr. Lynch from Home Movies, if you know that show. The teacher of Brendan. He sounds exactly like that. It's very kind of the very kind of sedate, monotone almost, that at times can make it sound like he's not interested. I will say that yesterday he really brought the energy on a lot of calls, and it was the most boisterous and energized that I've heard him in a long time, probably since that Michigan play in college football. It was an energy that he did not bring to Monday Night Football. And I think that he either has heard a lot of the criticisms of him and, you know, kind of raised things up for a game seven, or maybe those criticisms were baseless. And, you know, giving him a fair hearing as a viewer, you would hear the enthusiasm that might have always been there. Who knows? But I will say he was at the top of his game. You know, the studio team is very solid. Is it as good as Turner's? No, it's not. But it's certainly not as bad as NBA Countdown. I will say Levy has a knowledge of the sport and a love for the sport that shows. He is very comfortable in his own skin. Messier is good, but the star of the show is P.K. Subban, who, in replacing Chris Chelios, has infused that show with a life and a youthful vitality, no offense to Levy and Messier, that has really helped. He is the anchor of that show. Is it? And again, it's not as good as Turner's. It's not as good as what Turner has, but Turner's better at studio shows than anybody, so that's not a surprise. The only sport where Turner doesn't have the best studio show might be baseball, where I would argue that Fox, even though people don't love what Fox is doing, I'd say Fox is the best one. But, you know, to me, Levy, Messier, and Subban is a very solid team. You have a good time watching their dynamic. I talk about love of the game. I know this isn't true. I know it's not true. But the sense that I always felt was that when Levy and Melrose were covering the Cup Final all those years when ESPN didn't have the rights, my sense was that they like had to pay their own way. I have a mental vision of them just driving from site to site together, you know, in some beaten up car, the only car Disney would allow them to use to cover the Cup Final, going on a road trip together. Because, you know, that's they didn't ever have to send anyone to the Cup Final when they didn't have the rights. The ratings never justified it. But, you know, Levy and Melrose were always still there. That's a labor of love for them. I will say, you know, Emily Kaplan has grown into that role quite well. It's not a role that typically is occupied by non-players. That inside the glass sideline role in hockey, which is very different than in other sports, is a sideline analyst role. And so being someone who is not a former player, obviously being a woman, and we know what that's all about in terms of online perception and some of the slings and arrows, she has certainly grown into a role where a lot of people might get, you know, run out by the fans. All of that, you know, all of that praise is to say, I think that they have a pretty solid hockey broadcast. I think Ray Ferraro was good as well. It's hard to be as good as Albert and Olchik. It's hard. They've been doing it for a long time. But, you know, when McDonough has the energy, I think McDonough and Ferraro is not a big drop-off from Albert and Olchik. So to me, again, I don't watch enough hockey to say that with confidence. I'm sure there's people who do who will say, well, you know, what you're really missing is, you know, look, I mean, I never really even had a problem with Milbury and Pierre Maguire, and people hated them. So, you know, I'm not the one to talk. But from my perspective, I think they have a pretty good hockey broadcast at ESPN.
Let's go ahead and shift gears, John, to the Big East, who will reportedly be finalizing their media rights deals with Fox, who will remain the lead partner, and then NBC as well as Turner. That means CBS will be dropping out entirely. This is, you know, another little notch in the belt for Warner Brothers Discovery and Turner Sports, a little morsel of, college basketball inventory to add to their programming slate, kind of continuing their buying spree here. So, John, do you make anything of the Big East going to Turner Sports? Is this going to help at all, fill that gap that the NBA will be leaving in 2025?
No, I mean, the Big East might create some inventory. Are you going to get a million viewers for a Big East regular season game on cable? That's not even going to be one of the top games because Fox is going to be taking the top games and NBC is probably the two partner. No, I mean, it's not going to replace the NBA. But every little bit helps, but it's not going to replace the NBA. DePaul versus Creighton is not going to replace the NBA. There's nothing that can replace the NBA. You have to have the NBA rights, or you have to live with the reality of not having them. You can get by without the NBA, but don't think you're going to match the NBA. You can keep your network. I don't think Turner TNT is going to die out, but what can you really do? You know,
I mean, they're doing everything they can to avoid that sudden death, right? I think at the beginning of these NBA rights negotiations, when we were talking about this during the exclusive negotiating window and Turner came away without a deal, we were a bit alarmed, right? I think we, as in the media, were a bit alarmed that this could possibly be the end of Turner Sports as we know it. Yeah. I think they're doing enough to where they'll be here. They'll just be diminished. And we'll see if that impacts, the product that comes across your television, if there's going to be cuts that are made because of the fact that they don't have the NBA, and if the quality of their product goes down, that's still to be determined. But inking, several long-term deals, French Open deal was 10 years, I believe. Big East deal is going to be 6. College Football Playoff is 5 or 6, I believe, as well. So they've secured their future, at least in the near to midterm, right? It's a question of whether they will be around for the long haul.
Sometimes when something isn't working, you got to get out and you got to adjust and do something completely different. Without the NBA, and I don't think TNT is going to die out, obviously they have a lot of rights. The long-term future is not in basic cable, even though the money still is. How are you going to replace the money in basic cable? What can you possibly do? Because streaming isn't it. Streaming doesn't have the bundle. Streaming doesn't have the operators desperate to carry your network. You cannot replace that financial inventory. What do you do? Do you just hollow everything out for parts and get your golden parachute and leave? Because, I mean, that might be what has to be done. But I don't know. It's a really tough spot that they're in. It's a really tough spot that a lot of these companies are in. What do you do? You know, what do you do? Look, I mean, sometimes you just gotta ride that ship down into the bottom of the sea and go down with the ship and start playing that music like on the Titanic.
Yeah. Well, it figures that a lot of these, cable channels are going to go the way of the Titanic. It's just a matter of how fast they sink. And, we've been saying that for years. John, anything you want to wrap up with before we close out the show?
No. Like I said, we're not doing a pod next week. I'm not going to leave any uncertainty to it. Unless something weird happens and that merits us being on the air, like the NBA putting out their media rights, the week of July 4th, unless something like that happens, I think we will be off next week. We'll be back with more stuff as news develops, but enjoy the next couple of weeks and the holiday.
When you need to work quickly and confidently, you need Grammarly. It's a trusted AI writing partner that helps you get work done faster with better writing. And it works where you work, across 500,000 apps and websites. 96% of users agree Grammarly helps them craft more impactful writing. Get AI writing support that works where you work. Sign up and download for free at grammarly.com/podcast. That's grammarly.com/podcast. Grammarly, easier said, done.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.